Under the radar to me means authenticity, not being filtered.
It's a window in on the local stories that touch our lives.
And there's a huge void in the traditional media covering this new faces of Boston.
You may not be looking for a particular story, but when you hear about it, you're engaged.
Under the radar means ahead of the curve.
It's also perspectives. How does this particular story affect a community or a neighborhood?
I'm Callie Crossley. This week, Under the Radar, are undocumented immigrants closer to getting Bay State driver's licenses? The number of Boston teachers of color is small and getting smaller. What's the impact? And with no federal immigration bill in sight, states are moving ahead with laws. Later in the show, Lanyap, our Something Extra segment, when Mayor Marty Walsh named a young Harvard business grad from HuffPost Live as his chief of staff, reporters scrambled to get the backstory on the Andover native. Hear the story from the man himself when Daniel Arig Coe joins us later. But first, joining me in the studio is Marcela Garcia, a special correspondent at Telemundo Boston and a contributing writer for the Boston Business Journal and the Boston Globe. Hi, Marcela.
Hi, Callie. Thanks for having me.
And also with me is Julio Ricardo Varela, founder of LatinoRebels.com. Hi, Julio.
Hey, Callie.
All right, well, let's dive right in and talk about the Massachusetts Safe Driving Bill, which I know a lot of people have not heard about, but there's a very vigorous petition going on and campaign to get this bill passed. And essentially what it will allow is undocumented immigrants, some who need transportation and want to be able to drive legally and safely, to have a driver's license. Let me note before you begin to speak, Marcela, that a number of states have already passed this bill. So Massachusetts would be joining some of those states, and our area, Vermont, is one of those states.
Right. Well, more and more states have been passing these laws to enable undocumented immigrants to drive because, let's face it, they obviously do drive. That's a matter, you know, that's a fact. So number two, states have realizing that in the void left by, you know, the lack of immigration reform at the federal level, they have to do something locally. So again, this bill would not actually grant the driver's license that you and I have to these undocumented immigrants. It would be a special type of license that would allow them to drive and get insured. And again, this is in the interest of public safety, in the interest of them. Obviously, again, they already drive. And you see and hear all these cases of people getting into troubles with insurance companies. And again, this is also, this would also mean more business to the insurance companies. They want to have every driver insured. So I don't see why. It's a no-brainer, and there's a big push now going on at the legislature. There's a public hearing set for early February, and you know, it's a public hearing, so obviously the legislators are going to hear kind of like both sides of the story or the issue, and advocates and the sponsors of the bill. I think it's State Rep Carl Shortino, mm-hmm. and State Senator Jamie Eldridge. They have been working really hard to get this passed. And honestly, I don't really know what the prospects of the bill are, but I think it's encouraging that they decided to schedule this hearing so early in the year.
So, Julio, Washington, Oregon, California, right. These are the states that have passed it. New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, Colorado, Illinois, Maryland, Vermont, right. Connecticut, and Washington, D.C.
Right.
Typically, the pushback has been that the driver's license is the gateway for all other rights and privileges of citizenship. But Marcela has just explained that this is a special kind of license, so it couldn't be used in that way. So make the argument about, you know, why these other states have moved toward it, and it's likely Massachusetts may as well.
You know, this is where I get a little bit cynical as well. I think this is exactly what immigration reform is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be starting to account for an estimated number that people don't know whether it's 11 million, 12 million, 10 million. You know, the driver's license is sort of like the basic, you know, oh, I am here. I exist in this world. When people say coming out of the shadows, like this is something that would actually help people to come out of the shadows in a way that's respectful. I think let's face it, people do drive. People drive without licenses. I have had experiences or know of people that have had these situations happen to them where they've, you know, they've gotten into an accident and next thing you know, whether they have to cover it or not cover it, all of a sudden the person disappears. So, I mean, that's anecdotal and I'm just trying to like, let's be real here. You know, the other states like Washington, California, New Mexico, Utah, they've all passed it. Nevada.
But what do you say to people who say, yeah, yeah, they passed it, but that doesn't make it right. So
you have to go back to this country. You know,
here illegally.
No one's rewarding it. I mean, it's not like we're giving free driver's licenses away. Mm. People still have to like go and sign and pay.
I think it's just a practical solution to a fact of life. They're here, they're working. And, you know, I wrote about it a couple of months ago. And what struck me as very, very different is that how many more people are getting that this is a real issue. I wrote about this woman. You know, she is never, ever, American, born here. She got into an accident. And because of that, with an undocumented immigrant, and because of that, and because of the pain that she went through to get her insurance company to cover the expenses, you know, she started to advocate for this as opposed to saying, oh, let's get them out of here and blah, blah, blah. You got to be practical.
It's facing reality. Yes. And that's what I'm saying. It's like it's facing reality.
And educating people.
And educating people. And it's like, yes, people drive. And guess what? Like, it's actually a good thing. Now, you talk about a very, very small extremist view of this. And I don't really want to paint a broad brush. Like, you know, there's people in this world who will never, ever, ever think that anything that has to do with undocumented immigrants is a good idea. So like you give someone a driver's license, oh, they're taking our tax dollars. You give someone a driver's license, oh, they're going to become citizens and you're giving them amnesty.
It's because people see it through that lens.
Right.
And I think this has to change. One aspect, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day, how interesting it would be that somebody in the media hint, you know, to somebody out there listening, why don't you go and ask to the insurance companies, let's look at the business side of this, for example. One aspect to look at is, you know, where do you stand on this? It's more business for you. Why don't you support it? Why don't you lobby for this? Or just say something about it, you know? And I think that would help educate people a little bit, because if you start changing the lens through which we all cover this and talk about this, then we can probably advance
the
public debate.
But here's the thing. Changing the lens is very important. But then when you have, like, the what happened a couple of years ago with an undocumented driver that struck someone. So you get only one story. It's like, oh, he didn't have a license. He's undocumented. Mm-hmm. Send him back. Like, oh, burn him. Fire and brimstone. I agree with Marcella. It's like the person that is advocating for this realized, wow, like this is actually hard for me because this person who actually looks normal, I would have never have known that this person was undocumented or whatever. Like, I can't get my insurance money. Now it becomes a pocketbook issue. Now it becomes something that matters to you. And I agree with Marcella, especially the piece that she wrote. And like I said, I have stories of other people that have gone through the same thing. So this is not, you know, no one's getting amnesty here. No one's becoming a citizen. It's a driver's license, people.
Right.
Come on.
Right.
All right. I just wanted to note this woman. And again, we're talking about the safe driving bill that is up before the Massachusetts legislature. And a number of people are campaigning in support of it. Here's one woman who wrote in on part of the petition saying she needs a driver's license to take her daughter to the doctor and to school and her physical therapy. She came to the country 10 years ago. Her daughter was born here. She said she can't get a driver's license now, but she said, and here's the quote, every day I face a horrible dilemma. Is it more important that my doctor get the medical treatment she needs or that I don't run the risk of being taken from her and deported for driving without a license? So that's just one story. Yeah.
Of you know, hundreds of thousands. So something needs to be done about this.
Well, it's interesting because I don't have a sense. This has been so under the radar for me here. I don't really have a sense of the legislature
and
how they're feeling about it.
We talked about it here too, that in, you know, facing the lack of immigration reform and that going nowhere in Congress, we knew that states are going to have to, you know, are starting to.
Well, let's transition to that. Because that's a big deal now.
Right.
And that's a big part of this story that people don't get. You know, we keep hearing about the lack of movement forward on an immigration reform comprehensive bill from the feds. And what we have seen here most recently was the back and forth and the tension between an Arizona coming up with a really extreme, for some people, bill that then got knocked down after it got put in place by the Arizonians, but the Fed's saying, wait a minute, that's an overreach. That's our job. Well, the states are saying, Julio, yeah, it's your job, but you're not doing it. And then meanwhile, I'm here, well, we are here in our various individual communities trying to cope with this, and so we're going to take some action.
Right. But let's separate, you know, Arizona and Alabama and other types of laws like that, which, you know, the Alabama thing, the same thing. It was a restrictive Arizona's SB 1070 type law, and the Supreme Court was like, or, you know, sorry. We could argue about the fact as to why those bills were put in the first place. And, you know, and that's not I don't want to go there because I think that's past.
Right.
And I think we've gotten past because I think this country is changing. What is very interesting about what's going on now, California. Let's be real. If California were a country, it would probably be what, the fifth or seventh largest, whatever, seventh largest, richest country in the world. You know, there are now more Latinos. Did you read this stat that, you know, Latinos will now be the majority
in California.
March? So I think he needs to start looking at places like California, you know, and like this Washington Post piece talks about. It is blue and red still. But you know, when you see, I think, immigration reform that's a little bit more commonsensical, I predict, and, you know, I've been pretty good on the show predicting, Callie.
I predict
that, you know, Texas will start going down this route in a couple of years as well, because the numbers don't lie. Once you start seeing people that care more about immigration presented in a way that is more reality-based than fear-mongering-based, because I think we're starting to realize that, you know, the last 10 years of the chaotic border and, you know, the invasion of the United States of America, that's starting to die down. You start seeing Republicans starting, at least in D.C., starting to realize that, wait a minute, maybe the polls are right. Maybe 65% of Americans favor more comprehensive reforms. But the point being is that the demographics are changing. So states are obviously going to be the lowest hanging fruit to deal with this. And when you start seeing—
And in fairness, they're on the front lines.
Yeah.
Right,
While the feds are dithering around, the states are on the front lines. So what are we supposed to do?
And mind you, locally, there are other bills that are dealing with this issue. There's the Massachusetts Trust Act, which would, you know, follows or is modeled after the one that California passed in October or in the fall.
Right, and tuition bills as well.
And the in-state tuition. I mean, those three are the things that are...
Yeah, New Jersey just did it. I'm sorry. But
right.
I mean, you know,
the in-state
Governor
tuition
Chris
bill.
Governor Chris Christie, you know, the in-state
That's
tuition
right.
bill. And that and people were like, oh, my God, you know, undocumented students are now going to school and learning, oh, with our tax dollar. You know, New Jersey passed it, you know, and we're talking about Chris Christie, whether, you know, but he's still a national, you know, contender here.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you would not consider him a liberal as the boy.
Exactly.
So my thing is, it's like, there's plenty of Latino conservatives that I know that realize that, you know, common sense immigration reform has to happen. It's happening at the states. No one is giving Congress any credit, but who gives Congress any credit anyway for anything, Callie?
Well, let me ask this question, because here's what I think is going to happen, because Marcella makes a really important point. The two leading issues that even for states that don't seem as though they would be on the front lines of immigration reform are going to be in-state tuition for undocumented immigrants and students, and also the driving license. So here we are in Massachusetts, and you think, oh, well, we're not doing anything statewide. Oh, well, yes, we are, because we're looking at this bill.
Right.
So something is happening in all states in some form. So what I worry about, just as a citizen, is that what we have is all these states doing their individual thing, and then when they go outside of the bounds that the feds think they've gone out, then they come slam them down. And now we have kind of a patchwork by default of – and who can figure out, well, what's okay and what's not okay, because it's all crazy.
Well, unfortunately, that's the byproduct of the lack of action in Congress. That, unfortunately, you have to do this. You got to be practical. And like you say, it's the states, it's the cities, it's the towns, it's the local police chiefs dealing with all this stuff. They have to do something about it. And whether you go one or the other route, you know, like Hulu was saying, more and more people are realizing the right way to deal with this issues.
And Arizona, to be honest with you, if you look at the Southwest, and you look at the bills that are being considered or have been passed or even considered, like in Texas, Arizona is now the outlier. You know, you look at the West, you know, you look at the Western states, And really, let's look at this demographically. We have Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, Washington, Oregon, California. Texas is considering it. Let's look at the map of America. There's only one state that's still like not doing a lot more, and that's Arizona. It's changing. Whether people like it or not, it's changing because the demographics of America is changing.
And it's becoming nonpartisan. Slowly but surely, it is. You know, with people like Chris Christie getting on the right side.
But even in Arizona, I mean, it's like the extreme. You know, people have, they're done. People are done, you know.
All right. If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley, and here with me is Marcela Garcia of Telemundo Boston and the Boston Business Journal and the Boston Globe, and Julio Ricardo Varela of LatinoRebels.com. Now, the nonpartisan, getting to nonpartisan. Let's talk about this latest story that is very interesting to me and seems to make sense because I don't know how long it's going to be nonpartisan. If these Latino groups who have come together to say, we are not waiting until close to the election this time, we are putting all the cards on the table and getting the numbers to the polls. So what we have discussed here, we three and many other times in the past, is that the numbers in the community are high, but sometimes the voter numbers are not high. And even sometimes when the voter numbers are high, they don't go to the polls.
Turnout, yeah.
So, but now we have a National Council of La Raza and Mi Familia Voter Education Fund saying they're starting a new campaign and they intend to register more than 250,000 voters. This swings elections.
Right. Yeah, for sure. These are the numbers that we're talking about. And people are realizing it more and more, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, or if you think the Democrats are behind this or not, this matters. And you know, when I first saw this headline and read this piece, I couldn't help but be a bit cynical and thinking, oh, here we go again. The push and the desire of materialize those numbers and make them true at, you know, where it matters at the polls, because this is where it matters. This is why immigration reform hasn't been passed, because these people are not voting. And like you say, the numbers are there, but then the voters are not there, and then they don't go to vote. So I think that's key. It's kind of encouraging that they're starting this early, and whether that's going to have an effect remains to be seen. But again, I've seen this push, like, you know, for so many times already, and that it's, again, that it's not, it's, you know, it's hard to not see it with cynical eyes, but.
But, Julio, but let me just tag onto this. What Marcela said to me after Obama's reelection was that the mass group of Latino voters that gave President Obama the edge just chose the lesser of two evils. And so if that is the case, then there's a lot to lose on both sides or for both parties and a lot to gain if people get serious about it.
Well, here's there's a lot here, and I don't want to get too inside baseball with these Latino groups because, you know, when people say it's partisan or it's nonpartisan, you know, traditionally the organizations that are being mentioned here are organizations that support Democratic candidates.
Okay.
So let's just be, you know, a little bit upfront about that. And that, you know, that's fine. I mean, it's America. You can do whatever you want. What the point being is that there is a pushback right now from, I would say, people in our community who are just saying, well, you know, Latinos are all Democrats. So they're in the bag for Democrats. And I think, it, you know, in the same way, the conversation with the African-American community, it's that same type of idea. I would argue that that's changing, but I don't think that the Republican Party really gets it yet.
Right.
You know, and I think they might get it in places like they're trying to do it in Texas. They're trying to do it in certain places, but the brand isn't working. So
and it's right there in front of their
eyes. It's right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I come from Puerto Rico. And I don't think Puerto Rico, at least when I was growing up, was the most "quote unquote" progressive place in the world. So I see Latinos all over from all political stripes. I do have an issue with the mainstream media when they try to, you know, portray this thing that, you know, all Latinos are like they're progressive or and even the right. You know, the right wing media sometimes does it as well. They're like, oh, we're into socialism and. It's so much more complex. And so when I read something like this, I just go, yeah, this is just a voter drive for more, you know, from groups that want Hillary Clinton to win.
But here's the deal. If people don't, you can register people all you want, but if they don't go to the polls, then there is
I think traditionally in national elections, you know, I think 2016 is going to be another critical election. I think you'll see the numbers with Latinos in national elections. You know, on the local and city and state levels, I would question that, you know, like we saw in Boston. I mean, everyone's like, oh, you know, it just didn't come. People didn't come out. So I agree with Marcella's frustration. But I also think that, you know, this is great. I mean, more people should vote. But I see this as, you know.
Well, I guess it comes down to ultimately the bottom line is the Republicans need to step it up, obviously, because there is a real opportunity.
Yeah, but let's be real.
Here.
National Council La Raza is not going to be hey, Republicans, let's help you.
No,
raise
no,
votes.
Not
but,
them.
But the National Council La Raza can register people. That doesn't tell them who to vote for.
Right, but like you say.
I'm cynical about
like
it.
Like you say, they've
I know
always.
Too much.
Right, but I'm not saying. What I'm saying is that there's no reason why Republicans can do the same on their own and go and say, you know what, let's do a voter registration
but there's no
drive.
National, but here's my thing.
Right.
I think that's going to change.
There's national Latino organizations.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Let's just be real. And I'm not trying to be critical. It's just
we're
just calling the political reality.
No,
there's national Latino organizations that traditionally align themselves with Democrats.
If
Republicans want to do a registration vote, they don't have a National Council of La Raza. They're going to have to step up their game.
I mean, just look at the Obama administration. The few Hispanics that he has hired have come from places like the National Council
I'm
of
just
La
saying,
Raza.
It's like, so I mean, I think Republicans need to do it.
I don't think that's going unnoticed. And let me just note this from this piece, which I think will stand out to a lot of Republicans and Democrats as well. Latino support in Nevada put Harry Reid back in office.
Right.
He had an extremely tough race.
Right.
Had it not been for that, he would have been out.
But also it's because – yeah, exactly. But they played it – it was his opponent tried to play off this native sentiment, and they realized that the numbers were changing. And it's exactly right. Nevada is changing.
Nevada is a huge –
My point is for people who hate Harry Reid, and there's a bunch of them, maybe if they had thought differently about
it. Right.
That's my only point.
Right.
I'm with you on that one, Kelly. I'm with you on that one.
All right. So let's move on. This is going to be something to watch because these campaigns are going to be intensified over the next few months as we lead into go into these congressional elections, particularly because there could be shifts in the House and in the Senate. So many people are retiring. I can't even keep up with it. All right. Let's go more local. And talk about the push that Boston school officials are making, an outward push. Talk about pushing. Talk about trying to step up your game to say the numbers, particularly of Black teachers, but as noted in this piece, also there are a lack of teachers who can speak another language. And 45% of students' first language, this is the entire Boston system, is not English. So clearly, the need for a diverse faculty is there. It was required by law some years ago. They're not in compliance now. They recognize this and they're trying to do it. What do you think is the issue and why? I mean, Boston's a big place and, you know, it seems like it would be, if you're a teacher, perhaps a good place to...
I mean, I think...
Perception.
And also that the numbers changed so quickly. It was happening right under their noses and they didn't realize that. And all of a sudden, you have 87% of the student population that's minority, you know, either Black, Asian, or Latino. And it's insane to think that the teacher population doesn't reflect that diversity. Now, with Mayor Marty Walsh coming in and, you know, looking for a superintendent and all this, one would hope, that this issue would start to correct or to get better at least. But, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, as we've seen in his administration. Like, people had all these high hopes of, you know, a new era in Boston. And yes, but it doesn't happen overnight. The BRA is going to take years. And, you know, the police force is also, you know, seeing some changes in their executive
team. Some huge changes.
Huge changes. Mm-hmm. But my point is that, you know, in a complex system like the school, unfortunately, it doesn't happen overnight. You have to make sure, because you're not only going to hire more Latinos just for the sake of hiring more Latinos. You got to make sure that these people are
qualified
and qualified to deal with the challenges that this population represents. I mean, most of them are ELLs, English language learners. Some of them are not, and so you have to. You know, unfortunately, it's going to take time. I'm not particularly positive that, that it's going to happen sometime soon. It's going to take a while.
I think we're still paying for the price of history in Boston. I really think that, you know, now that we're looking at everything for the last 40 years, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But, you know, I love education. That's my I see these policies that were well-intentioned, but I think we're seeing sort of like what has happened to Boston. And the challenge is now to take that diversity and turn it into something that is not a shortcoming for the educational system of the city, but it's actually something that you're giving opportunities for children of color in the city and actually celebrate the diversity. I actually think that of all the things that former Mayor Menino did, I actually think that education, you know, I wouldn't give it like passing grades. I mean, I wouldn't get, you know, solid C. I mean, I think there was a lot of more things that were focusing in the city, in the fact that the neighborhoods made a comeback. But I think is if Mayor Walsh and if the administration does not begin to transform Boston's educational system, then especially a city of this class,
right?
You know, one of the things when I was doing in the 90s, I'll never forget this. I would visit these schools like just off right in Roxbury, and you could see the skyline of Boston, and I've never seen something so distant for a young kid. You know, places where we have Harvard, MIT, you know, we're such a
innovation hub.
Innovation hubs. And I know that we're doing it in pockets. I have friends that are doing it every day, you know, but I do think that what I fear about the Boston educational system is that we're still creating a system of two tiers.
Yeah.
And,
look at this.
This has to start somewhere.
Yeah. You know? This data is just depressing. Like this.
I
mean, at least supposedly this mandate that this, you know, lawsuit that happened decades ago.
Right.
Required that at least 25% of the district's overall teaching force be composed of blacks and 10% of other minorities. That it's not even representative at this point. And it's not even happening.
No.
The minimum
and I think
25%.
That, you know, and the problem is, you know, change will happen, but also the diversity of the city and the power structure of the city is still not diverse, but it's starting to change. So I think we're starting to see changes to I really think good things are going to be happening for Boston, because I've seen some really interesting signs about, like, you know, it is becoming, you know, just what Mayor Walsh has done with the police department. That's a big deal.
Yeah, right. naming
William
people
Gross.
Of color,
William
yeah.
Gross,
yeah, like as assistant superintendent.
Yes, and also in his cabinet, you know, his administration naming Felix Arroyo for the health and human services department and other people of color to important posts. But again, it's systematic and you know, institutional change.
When something's
forever.
Been so structurally changed for years, to expect this to happen like overnight, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
Well, I don't think people expect it to happen overnight. And by the way, I'm here with Marcela Garcia and Julio Ricardo Varela. And we're talking about the new marketing campaign, aggressive, as it's been described, to increase the numbers of teachers of color in the Boston school system. I will say this as a button to this conversation on another program I do, Basic Black. John Barros, who, as you know, was a candidate for mayor. I asked him if Mayor Walsh does not appoint a person of color as superintendent of Boston schools. Is that a mistake? And he said, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There must be. There cannot be discussion about it. When we look at these numbers and see, you know, who the students are and what needs to happen, that has to start there at least.
Yeah.
And there is much to be said about having a directive from the top.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Totally. It has to come from the top.
It has to come from the top, where that's emphasized along the way. I mean, I think that means something. So the fact that we mentioned the changes in the Boston Police Department, you know, not only with Superintendent in Chief William Gross, but first Latina moved up, you know, captains, persons of color who are now captains in the police department. That just had never happened.
Right.
Historic. And
forever.
And to think that that's historic, it's also a little depressing, but at least it's happening.
It is. So that's saying, you know, all around me in every department, I want to see it. So we'll you know, got to give Marty Walsh, at least for coming out of the gate, you know, doing that. There's importance in those first appointments and look for people seeing that and
absolutely.
Seeing that it seems to mean it, at least in that form. So we'll see. Let's switch topics to something that's interesting. There's a number of media stories that caught our attention that I think, have some emphasis. Cynical or not, you may be, Ricardo, about the registration push for, getting Latinos involved. That's a story that ought to be covered in a huge way. And it may yet be picked up and covered across the board. But certainly a place where it would have been covered was NBC Latino.
Oh, yes.
And this is an effort to really pay attention to the kinds of stories from that community on a national level that needed to be highlighted. Kind of sort of what we try to do here locally.
Right.
And they just shut it down and nobody said anything. And it's talk about changing demographics. It feels weird.
And what's going on? NBC.
Yeah. And being a contributor, I was, I'll be incredibly biased about this one. I was a contributor from October of 2012 until December 31st, 2013. And I used to write a weekly column for NBC Latino. So I have a deep, deep respect for the editorial staff there. Some of my dearest friends that I've gotten to know and love are just an incredibly dedicated people.
They're doing good work, though.
They're doing fantastic work. And I was happy to be part of that. From what I understand, so for people that don't know, because, NBCNews.com has its own website. And NBC Latino was formed probably about 2.5 years ago as sort of an English language website with the NBC brand to start focusing on Latino readers whose language is predominantly English. Because I think, one of the things, when I formed Latino Rebels in 2011, I saw that void immediately, and here I am talking to you on the radio. So I think, that was starting to happen. From what I understand, NBC Latino had an incredible an incredible affinity with its readers, strong community online.
But what does it mean that something dedicated to pulling out these issues and promoting them in the way that you do differently, but in a similar way on Latino Rebels, is being discontinued at a time when the demographics have changed?
A financial decision. I think NBC News is trying to rethink its content strategy. So there's two ways to look at this. You can be a mainstream news outlet and feature Latino content on news and actually just put it on the page and not have a little separate corner. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way they're going to go. I don't think that's the right decision personally, because I don't think it's established yet.
Right.
Or you can go through by the route of something like Fox News Latino, which is actually quite successful, or HuffPost Latino Voices, quite successful. And you just lose – I think for journalists or people in our world, Marcella, anytime you see a page shut down like this, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, so,
at this time,
look,
I would think.
Everybody that's in the media is struggling with financial challenges. Everybody, whether you are in – the internet space, whether you're print, obviously have bigger challenges than the web. But having said that, how come Fox News continues to invest? Their strategy is so different than NBC. And it strikes me as mind-blowing at best, to see that an outlet like Fox News sees it clearly and not only decides to invest, because mind you, they were the first ones, right?
Yep.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It's a big splash when they came out.
Mm-hmm. And again, Fox News, someone that editorially has been at odds with anything that has to do with, the big themes that matter to the Latino audiences. They decided to go for it, and they're still investing. They're still doing it. It's working. They recognize the need to cater to
this
audience.
And they still have to address that dichotomy, to be honest with
you. Oh, for sure.
Because
but
that's the
not
biggest
backing,
thing people...
Right.
But they're not backing down. I give them all the credit in the world.
And they
seem to be operating kind of like the Wall Street Journal, where the editorial page may have one perspective, but the rest of the paper,
look at Rupert Murdoch, who owns both these two outlets that you mentioned. He is so pro-immigration that it's ridiculous to see that. And you can see that in his outlets, of course. Obviously, there's a wall, and editorially, they're their own thing. But you can see his, his support for these issues in this decision to going forward with Fox News Latino. And of course, it's so sad that an outlet like NBC Latino is shutting down.
Because there was skepticism with Fox News Latino by readers. So when NBC Latino came out, people started going, oh, okay,
this
makes a lot of sense. So it almost provided a balance for Fox News Latino. So that, I can't even begin to read the tweets and emails that I've gotten from people in the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I just think it's
shocking for me.
It's flabbergasting.
From a monetary standpoint, and understanding the demographics, it's confusing.
I also lost a steady writing gig, so yeah. I'm not selfish.
Julio, that's not why we did this story. Sorry.
I'm sorry, Callie. I'm just giving
I do want to say, I want to just put this on the table, that Fox News Latino also just appointed the first Latino to hold a VP position within the new Fox. So they really are investing in that way.
Good guy.
And they raised in responding to this an issue that's come up that's very interesting, that's put a little pressure on this new effort called Fusion to try to find its way. So as you said, Julio, when you started LatinoRebels.com, you did English language because the demographics are that young Latinos...
Yes.
That's the language in this country.
Bilingual, bicultural, but they can kind of live in both worlds.
All right. So here's Fusion, which is now a kind of combination between ABC News and Univision, and they're trying to tap into that market. And they've done a whole program, which they've just now had to make some adjustments. A little bit crazy. But before we get into their specific thing, I just want to note that the latest ratings that came out demonstrated that there's a lot of folks, a lot of Latinos, still watching Spanish language.
Yes, of course it is. It's not gone away. I could have told you that before.
It's awesome.
It's awesome, but it just shows you that it's so. This is an audience or a demographic that's so complex that you cannot have a one-size-fits-all approach. And the more you get that, or the more you have, you know... Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but maybe NBC is thinking this way and saying, well, you know, because mind you, Telemundo is part of NBC, and maybe they're going to come up with a more complex strategy. And that's only me hoping and being optimistic, which I'm usually not. But it makes you think because you see the ratings and people watch telenovela like there's no tomorrow.
I don't think is a great thing, but I think it's
But it's the
awesome
reality.
Schlock.
It's the reality.
But it is what it is.
Because you got to admit that there's a part of demographics that still does that. Whether you're bicultural, whether you're English predominant, you come from a background and you live in a situation where your mother always did your aunts always did So that, you know, by association, it sticks with you. Whether you want to read NBC Latino, whether you read Latino Rebels, there's a part of you that still connects.
Or whether you read Univision, you know, Noticias or Telemundo Noticias. But I think this is what media is not getting. And I'm going to – and this is where I think that it's exactly what you said, Marcela. It's like the telenovela is like – you know, it's like the American sitcom, like culturally connected.
Spanish language.
Soap operas.
Don't know.
It's candy.
You know, it's always going to be there. Mm-hmm. We can argue about whether it's good or bad, but it is what it is. And, you know, I love to make fun of it, but it's so culturally connected. So there's still a compartment. People are still trying to separate it all. And no one's actually starting to go, hey, why don't we bring it all together?
Well, I think this is
what Fusion was trying to do.
But they're not doing it right.
They're not doing it right.
But they're not doing it right. I think they're playing it. See, in their effort to try to be edgy and to try to do this complex thing, they're trying many different things and failing. At least they're trying. You know, I'll give them credit for that.
And I will say that the people that we've dealt with at Fusion are incredibly like
open
to understanding. So I don't want to be like, oh, they are trying, but... You know, it started as a Latino millennial network, and now we're going to do the focus groups, and now it's every millennial. So my thing is, it's like, so, and then I think it kind of got literally lost in translation, and I think they're starting to realize that. You know, if you really, I don't think you can get Fusion in Boston, can you?
Yeah, you can, but only if you have Verizon Fios, which means that you have to live in the suburbs because Boston doesn't have Verizon Fios.
So my thing is with Fusion, it's like they had it. And then all of a sudden, it kind of went off the target. And I actually think now
they're starting to realize,
maybe we should be more Latino millennial like we started with. And I think it's having a – you're dealing with ABC on one side, which is perhaps, North American, like, network with Univision, which is, you know, Spanish language. I mean, it's
– And traditional Spanish language.
But it's a little bit oil and water. to be honest with you.
And they're still trying to mix a taco and a burger. Yeah, like, how do you make that happen?
So
you
know? I think that's
talk burger.
They're trying
talk burger.
Talk burger. Anyway,
but you know, and I want people to understand that the reason for discussing this, you know, at length is that this is a business story and a cultural story.
Absolutely,
because there's a lot of money in this, and so it's odd to see a network move away from the money. So you're wondering what that's about.
Well, the thing is, like when you look at successful sort of niche. And I always say, like, always look at the African-American media model.
Yeah.
You know, BET, you know, even when it was like My 38 or whenever, you know, UPN, but whether it was bad or good, but at least
you
know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And
you,
I think
you went
Fusion,
there to get it.
I think Fusion had it. People were incredibly excited
and
7 months ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, and now it's like, and it's like, well, I just want to watch 24 hours of Jorge Ramos when I can on Fusion. That's all I want to watch on Fusion.
And they have
and
it.
I have
they
friends
have
of mine
right there.
I love
yeah.
them all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
because I think Jorge Ramos, and I'll close with this, he really represents that marriage. You know, he...
And tell people who he is. He's
Jorge
so respected.
Jorge Ramos is like somebody so...
He's like the Walter Cronkite of
Spanish
language news.
Yes, somebody once called him the Anderson Cooper, which is not true.
No.
But only because he looks kind of looks like Anderson Cooper. But he is so respected, has so much credibility, speaks, you know, language, English flawlessly, and communicates to these two types of Latinos flawlessly. Like, he can go back and forth. And again, he represents...
He's cross-millennial and cross-generational.
Yeah, because you know, the mothers, the Spanish-dominant mothers love him and, you know, and totally trust him as a new source. But also, the Latino millennials also identify with him.
They dig him.
Totally do. So I don't understand why they don't make him...
That's why they should. This is my last advice to Fusion. Jorge Ramos, Spanish language newscast from 6 to 6:30. English language newscast from 6:30
and you
to
7. Gotta have some novellas. You gotta have
some. And have
some
telenovelas and have fun with it.
Yeah. Wow, that would be it. That's a really...
Hey. All we
I just
need
gave
some
Fusion
investors,
free advice.
Really.
That's a good program,
all we need
actually.
Is some investors for you and I to create our own.
I'm like...
Julio, actually, that's a really interesting channel, I have to say.
It's what I do. You know what I'm saying? I told them that too, but, you know, they're noodling it.
All right, well, in the meantime, that particularly hyped morning show is... getting changed. So we're going to see more changes for them before it's over. And as always, I appreciate the insight of you two into all these things. Thank you both, Marcella and Julio.
Thank you, Callie, for having us.
Marcella Garcia is a special correspondent at Telemundo Boston and a contributing writer for the Boston Business Journal and the Boston Globe. Julio Ricardo Varela is the founder of LatinoRebels.com. Coming up, Lanyap, our Something Extra segment. News of Daniel Arig Coe's appointment as Mayor Marty Walsh's chief of staff elicited both excitement and skepticism. But mostly there was not much information about the Andover native, who comes to City Hall from HuffPost Live. He's here in the studio to tell his own story and joins us next. You're listening to Under the Radar. I'm Callie Crossley.